time now for America in the Balance. Brought to you by Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And now your co-hosts, Amanda Teagarden and Don Wyatt.
And welcome, freedom-loving Oklahomans, to another hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is one of your hosts, Amanda Teagarden, in studio with my co-host, Don Wyatt.
Great to be here with you again today.
It's another great and hot day in the state of Oklahoma.
Very toasty.
Toasty is a good word.
And a bit humid, I might add, from Arizona.
Compared to Arizona.
Compared
to Arizona. We're broadcasting from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and the website for America in the Balance is OK Safe. That's OK-Safe.com, OK-SAFE.com. And our other website, which is dedicated to a single subject, which is ExposingHealthcareReform.com. And it does just that. It's dedicated to the issues of healthcare reform, telling the truth about what it really is, how it truly is, the real definition of it, and the timeline of its implementation in the state of Oklahoma, which is significant now, Don, because the Supreme Court has said that we can all be taxed for something that we don't buy.
Nice. Yeah, maybe they'll tax me while I'm asleep next.
Yes, we're not going to have any money left, and of course, but what is significant about that ruling is that it is basically confirmation that we no longer have a constitutionally limited government.
Apparently that is, in fact, the case. Some of the guests from our frequent shows have published some emails just recently, and this is a very troubling legal precedent that they've just established. He's basically calling it a tax when Congress and the president adamantly refused and denied that it was a tax at the time. So
it is a tax according to the Constitution.
But that's better
their interpretation.
Yeah, that's better than them deciding that it's okay under the Commerce Clause. I'm glad they didn't do that.
Yes. Now, there's a push to establish the exchanges, Don, in the state of Oklahoma, the insurance exchange.
That's right.
And our position, you and I haven't spoken.
Continues
to be do not build the exchange.
Exactly.
It is a complete redesign of the insurance market.
Right.
And it has always been a separate issue from the individual mandate.
Right.
But to redesign the market and insert a middleman into what was normally a two-person business transaction will do one thing, and that's increase the cost of health care in this country.
Absolutely, and it will reduce options. It's going to have a lot of bad effects. Another organization that I'm involved with, as you know, is the Tulsa 912 Project, and
yes,
we put out a press release yesterday about the decision regarding the Obamacare or the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. And one of the arguments that we made in that press release is that the Cato Institute continues to believe that the law itself is drafted so poorly that it cannot be implemented unless the states implement the exchanges. And we've been fighting against Oklahoma here implementing the insurance exchange for quite some time, and should and will continue to fight against that.
Yes, we will. You have another website?
We do. Everyone should pay attention to boondoggleblog.com. Boondoggleblog.com. We post information there that's primarily related to Oklahoma and Tulsa County tax fiascos, but believe me, everything we're discovering as we dig into local and state government, I bet you would find in your own city and in your own state.
We're going to discuss, Don, during the course of this conversation with our special guest, who is Pastor Dan Fisher, who recently won, in fact, on Tuesday, June 26th, a House seat in the Oklahoma legislature.
We
will discuss, though, the smoking out of the vested interest groups that are really running the Oklahoma legislature.
Exactly.
And we will discuss that, including their PACs. But,
yeah. And my bet is that in your state, you have a similar kind of a situation.
You will have the same concept where you will have special interest groups that are running the entire state.
Calling the shots.
While you have the appearance of having representative government when you, in fact, do not have representative government at all.
And that's one of the reasons we're so thrilled that that Dan was successful in his race. Let me see if that's me. I'm sorry.
You're calling it again. You did it last week.
I did.
We'll have to have a little sign here to turn off the cell phones. All right. We are privileged today to have as our special guest that very candidate who did win a hotly contested race in the state of Oklahoma. As you mentioned, Don, we have been fighting against Obamacare's implementation, the implementation of that very egregious law in the state of Oklahoma, which has a reputation of being the reddest of the red state.
That's right.
And in 2010, all the candidates for office campaigned against Obamacare. But, Don, as we found out through the legislation, if you actually watch what they're doing, they're implementing all the provisions of that bill.
And proud of it.
And proud of it. So much so that that they believed that they could get away with campaign promises that were contrary to what their actual activities are.
And in fact, when they run for re-election, they continue to assert that their actions are designed to protect us against Obamacare, and we know exactly the opposite is true.
It's lies, lies, and more lies. Mm. And the people bought it, and across this state, we had an unprecedented number of Republican challenges to the incumbents.
Right.
And that the unspoken rule is that, in general, when a Republican is elected or anybody is elected, is that you let them run till their term expires and then you run the next guy.
Right.
And the people of Oklahoma said, no more. You people are lying to us and that
That's
we
right.
need better representation.
That's
and
right.
so there were several offices, I think about 15 offices,
I think that's right.
that were challenged. Republican incumbents
in
were
the primary.
In the primary.
Right.
And we had a huge primary on June 26th. I was really disappointed at the turnout.
It was pathetic.
Pathetic. But that was to the advantage of a lot of grassroots because the more informed people right. went to the polls. And some stupid people still did.
But there always are.
There are. It's like they'll show up for voting and then just forget. It's like, no, we don't want you to vote now.
Yeah, go back home.
Go
stay
back home
next time.
And because I say that because a lot of grassroots people took tremendous personal hits.
Yeah.
Character assassination would be the
vicious.
Word that comes to mind.
Yeah,
mudslinging.
Outright lies.
Outright lies. All kinds of. Accusations
yeah.
and political cover was given to the incumbents by running their campaigns. Anything that had their name on it was all smiley face and happy.
Right. And then they had
PACs
or special interests that did the hatchet work for them.
That did the hatchet work for them. Well, yeah. we had one successful election, and that was in House District 60, which is in the El Reno and Yukon area of the state of Oklahoma.
Down towards Oklahoma City.
Around right. the Oklahoma City area. And our special guest today is the pastor of Trinity Baptist Church in Yukon, Oklahoma. And yes, a pastor did run for office and get elected.
More than one, in fact.
And more than one.
Ran, anyway.
Ran, and I can tell you that we're going to get right into the program now and hear what the topic is. Grassroots candidates faced stiff opposition from the establishment machinery. And, Don, we saw that machinery firsthand.
Well, we did.
Everything from personal attacks to outright lies, and most lost in the primary election. One grassroots candidate, Pastor Dan Fisher, did succeed in getting elected to Oklahoma House District 60. And we're asking you to join us today as we discuss this most contentious campaign and Dan's plans for the future of House District 60. And Dan, are you there?
I'm here.
Well, thank you very much for taking time out. I know you're at a conference out of state.
Right.
And where are you?
Well, we're in Kansas City at a pastor's conference.
So you're elected and still conducting your pastor's duties.
Oh, yes, ma'am, Amanda. That's my first call, and I will always... be committed to that call that I received from the Lord years ago. In fact, I was called to preach when I was 16.
Oh, bless you.
But I felt God also leading me into the political arena for years now, and so this was my first stand at it.
Well, without going into too much detail, I know you're a bit of a history buff. I could even say history expert, I think. But one of the areas of history that you are very knowledgeable on is the role that the clergy or the pastors played in our period of founding here in the United States, and the perception that they should be cloistered away and never say anything political is certainly not the way we were founded, was it?
No, that's certainly not the way we were founded. And you know, you can you can trace it all the way back to beyond the years right before our War of Independence with the pilgrims and the first ones who came to America. Obviously, they were motivated by biblical principles and intended to establish a community that was ruled by godly principles, and so they formed their government based upon scripture. But when you get to the period of time right before our War of Independence, you have a generation of preachers that were produced by the First Great Awakening, and these guys were convinced that the Bible touches every area of life. There wasn't any subject that the Bible did not deal with, and they had come out of a heritage of government based upon biblical principles. They found everything they needed to use to govern themselves right there in Scripture.
Exactly.
So these guys preached it. Oh, they preached it right from their pulpits.
And when they got preaching, they walked out, and their congregation followed them right into war carrying their weapons.
Oh, yeah. In fact, there were many of the guys who were actually commissioned officers. You take John Muhlenberg, George Washington commissioned him first as a colonel to raise the 8th Virginia Regiment out of the Woodstock, Virginia area, and Muhlenberg went on to be promoted to major general. And his statue is in Statuary Hall in the Capitol today.
Right.
He was a Lutheran preacher.
And they campaigned all up and down the coast. They weren't just in their backyard.
Oh, no. In fact, that the British were so intimidated by the preachers, and they knew that the preachers were the primary reason that the colonists were fighting, they gave them a special name. They called them the Black-Robed Regiment. Sometimes you'll hear them called the Black Regiment. But it had to do with the black robes that most of them preached in. Both white and black ministers would wear these robes. And the British were so intimidated and so fearful of them that they called them that name. And the pastors wore that title as a badge of courage and a badge of honor. And they led their men right onto the battlefield.
And the Black Robe Regiment was a primary target for the British from a military perspective as well, right?
Oh, no question. In fact, many times when they would capture these pastors on the battlefield, they would execute them right on the spot.
Right.
If they didn't execute them, they would put them on prison ships, which were just ships that were anchored out in harbors. And these guys would have to live below the top deck and spend every day underneath. And you can just imagine the kind of horrible situation. In fact, among those who died in the prisoner of war camps during the War of Independence, the pastors were the highest number.
Isn't that?
They hated these men. In fact, when the British would go into a town, they would begin to burn the churches and burn the parsonages. When they occupied New York, they burned 10 of the 13 churches there. They just destroyed them.
Well, we've lost that understanding or knowledge from our history, and it's to our detriment that we've lost it, isn't it?
Well, it is. And in fact, you actually have to go back as far as to the War Between the States to find books that were even written on these guys. Now, there have been some recent interest, and there have been some things. In fact, I'm just finishing a book on these guys. I have rewritten their history again, and hopefully to have it out in a few months.
Wonderful.
It will be an incredible resource work. In fact, there's almost 600 footnotes, so it's a book based totally in historic fact and trying to revive this lost history that I think has been more than lost. It's been intentionally erased.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So that we wouldn't know about it.
Yeah.
And so our pastors today have no concept of the incredible heritage that they received from those Black Robe Regiment preachers in the 18th century.
And there's a group now by that name, isn't there?
Well, there is. It's kind of an unorganized group. There's no official leadership. In fact, my good friend Paul Blair and I are kind of seen as the leaders of the Black Robe Regiment in Oklahoma.
That's right.
And I guess I'm the only guy, other than David Barton of Wall Builders, I guess I'm the only guy going around doing talks on these guys. Now, mine's a little different from David's in that I do it in a full period costume and repeat Muhlenberg's pulling off his robe and revealing his colonial soldier's uniform, and I carry with me a musket that was actually carried by a Revolutionary War soldier named Isaac Cook. He carried that flintlock to Bunker Hill, and we think he may have even used it at Concord.
Wow.
But we know that he crossed the Delaware with it and fought with Washington at Trenton. So I carry a number of relics with me and give a full history of these guys, and it's a pretty stirring presentation.
Well, it is, and it's so important because so many of us have been raised in the absence of that knowledge, and it is inspiring to realize how relevant, how absolutely critical, even in leadership, the clergy was in the past, and how we need to reestablish that.
Yeah, well, Don, what's happened is pastors have bought the myth of separation of church and state.
That's right.
They've also bought the myth that pastors are not supposed to be
political.
Oh, I don't know what the word would be, bold, courageous, right. Manly.
Controversial.
See, look in Scripture, look at Joshua.
Oh, yeah.
Look at what a man's man he was. Look at the strength of Moses. He was 120 years old when he died, and Scripture specifically notes that his natural strength was still there. And you find David, all of these great men, they were men.
That's right.
And our pastors today have become, in many instances, what I call sissy, you know, and
the feminization of the pastor.
Oh, they were bold and courageous.
My pastor says that they preach a Jesus that rides side saddle.
That's a pretty good way to put it.
I like that.
That's a pretty good way to put it.
Yeah,
I like that.
You going to take that musket with you to the Capitol?
I actually did have it there at the Capitol a few weeks ago. When I spoke at the Oklahoma Second Amendment Association Day there in the rotunda, and there was a picture on the AP that we used in some of my actual material in my campaign where I'm holding that thing up as I'm speaking at the podium. So it's already been there once.
That's great.
I'm glad to hear that. Now, you won your race in House District 60 with 54% of the vote to 45%, and your opponent was a man named Matt White. How was your campaign conducted? Did you take some personal hits as the other candidates did, or what happened there?
You know, Amanda, our campaign was actually very clean. Matt is the mayor of El Reno, and I guess is the largest voting block in this district. Now, Western Yukon is in the district, and a town out west called Hinton is in the district, but as far as a metropolitan area, as far as a town, El Reno was the largest block. So I was up against a pretty good challenge there because Matt grew up in El Reno. He's been the mayor now. He's in his second term. And I guess it could have gotten dirty, but, you know, it never really did. We stayed to the issues, and there were probably some personal reasons on Matt's side why we didn't throw a lot of mud. He and I, in a lot of ways, are philosophically and ideologically on different paths. But still, it was a very clean campaign, and I'm glad that we didn't get into some of the things that some of the other races did.
Yeah, that's good.
Paul Blair's race, another pastor. Now, you're describing something when you and Don were speaking, I was just imagining, is like, what a fine character. You would think that the Republican machine would welcome somebody of that stature, that nature, that character into the legislature, and would actively pursue them. But I got, you know, based on what happened in this state, in the opposition against people who are just like that, just like you, you would have thought that they were the most dangerous. The wolf in sheep's clothing.
That's, right.
That's how they're
right.
all characterized by somebody,
right.
was that those were wolves in sheep's clothing,
right.
and that the people needed to keep these incumbents, who I guess were just saints.
Yeah.
just don't look at the fact that their homes are in foreclosure. Or
any of the other stuff.
of the other stuff. But what was actually happening, I'm glad to hear that your campaign was run cleanly and that your running mate, your opposition in there, actually conducted himself in an adult manner. That did not happen here in Tulsa.
Right.
We had a candidate who's claims to be a Baptist, and who actually is a Baptist, conducted one of the most vicious campaigns against a fellow Christian that I have ever seen conducted, and yet he claims that anything that had his name on it was positive. You know, smiling faces, Mary Fallon endorsed him,
right.
and Todd Lamb, the lieutenant governor, all the happy stuff. So what they've done is anything that had the incumbent's name on it was the happy face stuff, and then all of the vicious attacks were paid for by these PACs.
Right.
One PAC dedicated $90,000 to just opposing Pastor Paul Blair.
That's right.
Which, if you just look at a just brief bio, let's see, ex-NFL football player and a pastor, golly.
Businessman.
And a businessman, you're thinking, man, they're going to embrace him just like they did J.C. Watts or they did Steve Largent and bring these guys in. And you would have thought that it was the plague bodified, embodied there, and that they came out to protect Senator Clark Jolly and oppose a fine person such as Paul Blair. It is just a very revealing campaign, what happened and what Brian Crane did to Kevin McDougall
right.
and the other candidates, these races here. So it was disheartening, but on the other hand, it was very good to see the true colors of these incumbents revealed.
Well, yeah, it really, really was. And, you know, one of the things you would think that with all of the scandals in government, they would welcome people that have lived a life and established a reputation of character. You would think that they would want some safer candidates, guys who have kind of proven themselves under fire, you know?
Right.
But we both know, or the three of us know here, that the state chamber was one of the big groups.
Right.
One of the major leaders, especially in the race with Paul. And, you know, they even got involved in my race. The last two mailers that went out in favor of my opponent were financed and designed by the state chamber. So they came after me, but not like they did Paul. Of course, they, Amanda, like you said, they were trying to defend their darling. And I think the reason being is these guys have decided that business is more important than morality. You know, they've gone on record as saying they believe that if we outlaw things like embryonic stem cell research, that it'll make Oklahoma look like a backward state and the other states will look down on us. And they just believe that it's not good for business to hold to fundamental biblical morality and to the founding principles of our nation. And so they have decided to attack anyone who embraces those, and Paul, unfortunately, was one of the greatest recipients of their wrath.
And he's high profile in defending the moral basis or compass that underlies daily priorities too.
Dan, I think they just didn't want the truth revealed about what's actually happening at the legislature by having more witnesses actually in the chambers to see what's going on and people who would speak out. And I'll tell you, one of the PACs that was created was Coalition for Oklahoma's Future. Coalition for Oklahoma's Future. And right off the bat, they had about $300,000 dedicated right. as a PAC money, and they paid for these hit campaign, these media blitzes, and it was primarily four entities: Chesapeake Inc., that's the energy production company, the Chickasaw Nation, which is a very powerful influence in this state, the Continental Resources Incorporated, which is, again, oil and gas production, and the Rooney Holdings Incorporated, which is into development. These guys each have vested interest in that legislature, and I don't think it's too far a stretch to say that what has been revealed, in addition to the chamber people, which a lot of those people all, it's right. a small group of people, really, is that we have really been shown who thinks they own Oklahoma's legislature.
Right.
They own those guys. They own Clark Jolly. They own Newberry. They own Mazie. They right. own Brian Crane. And these are their go-to guys. When I say own them, they are the ones guaranteed right. to protect the interests of these small groups of people.
We need to also mention the source of all this money, because George Kaiser, the well-known liberal Democrat from Oklahoma who was in the White House repeatedly in the Obama administration, is one of the major funders.
He funded Newberry, didn't
exactly,
he?
Exactly, he
and
did.
And Brian Crane. Brian Crane took money from
so,
him
so
as
So we've
well.
Got a case where a liberal Democrat is funding what are supposedly conservative Republicans, and you know that there's more to that story than meets the eye.
For those who don't know, George Kaiser, just think of Solyndra.
Solyndra, yes.
Solyndra, S-O-L-Y-N-D-R-A, Solyndra. Solar panels.
Yeah, that was him.
That was him. By golly, what a way to get a business started and have no cost to you at all.
What's the old cliche? You make public the loss or the loans, and then you privatize the profits.
Oh yes, you socialize the costs and privatize the profits.
There you go. Right.
So he's an advocate for that. And if we elect people who are not part of the normal channels and get in there, they're going to break up the little scheme of socializing the costs and privatizing the profits. Just like you said, good thing you brought that up, because that's a tremendous point. The partnership between government, business, and the universities.
That's right.
And that's the economy.
It's sinister.
It is sinister. And by golly, it just gets advertised as, this is more research and development. And I tell you, we've talked about this before. That's why that personhood bill doesn't get passed.
That's
because university research is dependent on it. And I think that in vitro fertilization is not all about getting Christian couples children.
Right.
I mean, I think that's it to some degree. But if anybody, it is a business. If anybody actually believes that government has a moral interest in doing the right thing, or as you mentioned before, governing by godly principles, that is not the case.
Right.
Dan, that's the music.
It's really not.
That's the music indicating.
You know, Andy.
Just a second. We're going to go to a real brief break, and then Dan, hold that thought, and we'll come back. This is America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. We'll be right back.
Promote your business on the internet? The Truth in Focus Radio Network reaches listeners locally in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and all across the United States. The shift is on from traditional media to internet marketing. Stay on the cutting edge with your business. Advertise with us today. Email radio at truthinfocus.org. You heard the word, so will they. Email us at radio at truthinfocus.org.
Power of God.
And welcome back to the second half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with my co-host Don Wyatt.
Thank you for picking that music. That was excellent. I was just now thinking that that should have been played at every one of our victory rallies when we didn't turn out to be victorious, because that is the point. Power and honor and glory, and the battle is the Lord's.
The battle is the Lord's, and even though it may not look like we won, in a lot of these cases, God, there will be a victory, and yeah. We have that assurance.
Right.
And it says, raise up a standard. And
that's
the
right.
Standard that we're supposed to be raising is the Lord Jesus Christ.
Absolutely.
And those who are true followers of the Lord. And those people would not have engaged in the types of political mudslinging that actually occurred. And so truth is revealed. And it's always good to have truth revealed, even if it's painful.
Get it on the record.
It is on the record. And our guest today is Pastor Dan Fisher, who won House District, 60 in El Reno, Oklahoma, and Yukon area. And Dan, at the when we went to the break, you had a thought you wanted to share with us.
Yeah, Amanda, you mentioned a while ago that one of the reasons these guys have resisted people like myself and Paul Blair and Bob Daney and others is they don't want the truth coming out. And that is exactly right. You know, Jesus said that men who are evil love the darkness because they can do their deeds under the cover of darkness, so they hate the light. When I spoke at a tea party in Enid a few months ago, right after the American Laws for American Courts went down in flames, because of the Republicans who wouldn't vote for it, and two Republicans who didn't even show up to vote, and one of them was Paul Blair's challenger, or Paul Blair's opponent, Clark Jolly.
Mm-hmm.
I named them by name in the speech. I gave the name of all six Republicans who folded and wouldn't stand up for liberty and for the Constitution. And I understood that later there were some conservative leaders in Enid offended that I named their names.
Yep.
And I said, well, what do they have to be offended of?
That's
if
right.
They're proud of their vote, then they ought to not mind somebody giving their name. And so what I intend to do when I get to that Capitol is I'm going to do that kind of thing. I'm going to shine
Good.
The light on them.
Good.
And we're not going to let them hide in the darkness anymore.
We put a piece together up here in the Tulsa area naming local legislators that had gone the wrong way on some really important issues, and they treated it as though it was a hit piece. They were so offended.
I understand. Well, Clark Jolly was offended at Paul Blair because Paul had the audacity to bring his voting record into the public view.
Right.
I think that most people would be very, very, in Oklahoma, would be very frustrated if they knew that the personhood bill was actually killed by Chris Steele and, we believe, Mary Fallon.
Right.
Of course it was, because the vested interest, just like we mentioned before, is tied to the universities.
Right.
Exactly.
The term I'm offended, that's really kind of a progressive tactic
that's
used
right.
to defend themselves as I'm offended, as though that is some sort of an elevated... it was like, okay, yeah,
claiming
we're all,
the high ground.
Yeah, claiming the I am offended, but it also distances them. It's a technique to distance themselves from the actual argument and not
right.
take accountability. Is by golly, dude, you voted for the bill.
Right.
Your name is on it.
That's
maybe
right.
maybe you even authored it. It's like, here, we're the offended party here. The
that's
people
right.
of Oklahoma are the offended party
right,
here.
Right.
They are the perpetrators.
That's right.
And
Especially when 80%, it was just short of 80% of the Oklahoma citizens voted for the facsimile of the ALAC bill when they said, we only want the U.S. and the Oklahoma Constitution to be the supreme law of the land.
That's right.
And when you have almost 80% of your citizens, and then these guys who campaign as conservatives go and have the audacity to vote against a similar bill, and two of the Republicans, one of them, the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, are too busy to even show up to vote.
That's right.
They come on. I think he was offended. I'm offended.
Yes, right. And that's the correct attitude, the proper attitude to take, because they are offending us with the types of
that's
legislation.
Right.
And now, they passed a bill. Mary Fallon signed it on May 21st of this year, saying the Water for 2060 Act, that says the public policy of the state of Oklahoma is that Oklahoma will use no more fresh water in 2060 than we're using in 2012 this year. So what an egregious law to pass. What an outrageous bill to put your name to. And what a concept is that we're going to ration water to a
arbitrary level.
That's the word. I keep forgetting it. It's like Don's got the right word. It's just arbitrary. Well, let's pick 2012, and then going for the next two generations of Oklahoman, that's all the water you can use in this state, and while we grow the population and the economy. Now, is that even logical, Dan? Is that logical?
Well, no. It's completely illogical, but Amanda, as you know, that's a part of that thinking of Agenda 21.
Exactly.
Out in Colorado, the citizens are fined for catching rainwater in containers or barrels because the state claims that that's their water.
Well, it's public's water. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's nuts, and it's incredibly egregious. And the whole idea that we're a parasite on planet Earth, when the Bible clearly teaches that God made the Earth for man, and it's our job to tend it, yes, and take care of it, but to subdue it.
Right.
That's our job.
Right.
And Dan, it's going to rain again, isn't it?
Well, you know, it may not feel like it today, but yes, it will rain again.
I'm pretty sure it's going to rain again. But 48 years of restricted levy. But the...
We talked about this in one of our recent shows, that they create this image or illusion of scarcity. For
exactly.
Other reasons, for totally different political agenda reasons.
And they'll have just the right solution with the right product to sell to municipalities and local governments and the state to recapture this brackish water and
right.
Clean it. And so it's really about the technology that they can sell it back to the state. And that's a whole other subject, which
right.
We'll get into. So, Dan, are you prepared for the little indoctrination program you're going to go through as you prepare? No, really, it's serious.
Oh, yeah, I know.
They're really going to go
well,
through
it
to teach you the process of what it is and the art of compromise and the little teaching that you're going to be brought into about how to be part of the team and how the caucus works and the whole legislative process, and you stay within these narrow boundaries, and that's how it works. Dan, are you prepared for that?
Well, I'm prepared to not participate in that. But
good
let me
for
tell you.
You
what I've done. I've run on the concept of an open caucus. One of the things I'm going to be pushing for is to get the Republicans to open up our caucus. I mean, why in the world
good idea.
Are we afraid for our public knowing what we're doing?
Yep.
We're representing them. They yep. elected us to and set us up there. Why in the world would we meet behind closed doors constantly?
Good question.
So
you're going to go back to remedial legislator training. I can already tell. for non-compliance.
Well, you know, I know. As a pastor for 36 years, I have learned that there are some things you just don't compromise on. And the very reason I ran was not to make friends and build some type of second career. I already have a job. I'm pastor of Trinity Baptist. Our church is around 1,000 in attendance, and I don't need another job. I'm doing this because I feel compelled by the Lord. And secondly, I don't think I can stand by any longer and watch this nonsense. So if they're intending on brainwashing me, that's going to be a pretty hard job, because I've already committed myself to God's principles, and I'm not interested in their stuff.
Good for you.
Aren't you just a team player, though? You're just not a. I'm really preparing
well,
you.
I'm a team player if they're playing for the right thing.
Yes.
I'll work with them if they're working for the right principles. But no, I'm not going to compromise at the core. In fact, when I was campaigning, I told people, I said, "Look, because I don't need another job, I have plenty to do. I go around the country doing this Black Robe Regiment presentation. I pastor a very large church. I don't need another job. So I'm going to go up there, and I'm going to stand for what I believe in. If that costs me the next election, well, just so be it."
Sure. Well, I think everybody that goes into office with the comfort that they are not intending to stay there. If somebody decides they want them out, it's not going to hurt their feelings. That really makes you a stronger, representative of your constituents.
Well, certainly it does. I mean, a lot of these jokers begin working on their reelection just as soon as they're elected.
Or their step up to the next office, whatever that is.
Well, right, yeah.
It's funny.
God wants to elevate someone. You know, you look at the history, look at the life of George Washington. God used him and kept elevating him.
He did.
He kept running away from it. They would have to force him.
That's exactly right.
To take the office. And I've always said that the man should not seek the office. The office should seek the man.
That's exactly right.
What are your plans? Dan, maybe you haven't had a chance to think this through, but what are your plans for the upcoming legislative session, which is a two-year session? It's 2013 to 2014, and you'll be sworn into office, I think, in October, November.
Yes.
And No, maybe it's before that, because the legislative deadline for filing bills is in December.
I think that's right. Yeah.
So you'll have to be sworn in.
And then the session itself will begin in early February and
the
run
first Monday of February.
Till the end of May.
The swearing in is sometime in November.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. What are your plans? Do you have a concept? What is your platform? And what are your ideas?
Well, Amanda, one of the things that is really high on my list is I want to see some rules changes. One of the things that I want to see is I want to see an end to these small dictatorships in the form of committee chairpersons. You know, people elect their representatives and senators to go up there and present legislation or to fight for issues that matter to them. But the way that this system works, you have, for instance, in the House, the Speaker of the House, who is the grand poopah, who then appoints his little minions who run all of the committees, and they'll just arbitrarily decide, I'm not going to hear a bill dealing with such and such.
That's right.
And
or from so and so.
Representation is completely cut off.
That's right.
You know that
so
the lead
change to that.
I think I applaud you for that, because that's a necessary thing to happen, and I'm so happy you didn't say that I want to pass a law that does such and such, because we have too many laws on the books
laws.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have. Yeah. We need repeal.
Yeah,
it
would be
that's
great.
Exactly right. And of course, I ran on the concept of smaller government. I believe the government that governs least governs best.
Well said.
And when you hear, for instance, right now, our federal government talking about all this immigration reform, we don't need immigration reform. We need to enforce the laws we have.
That's right.
So that's what I would be for.
Just prepare yourself for those little office visits from Senator Williamson and some others, speaking for the governor here. Now, what will it take to get you to go along here? Or what do you think the grassroots would like? And you'll find out pretty quick. So rules changes is one thing. I think that's an excellent idea. There are strongholds there. The power is in the power of appointment to the committee chairmanship's position. And the rule about the chairman having the discretion to hear or not hear a bill, and they generally don't hear bills. Now, they get their instructions from the governor's office, since they have the majority. So the governor's office says, this is what I want you all to accomplish at the beginning of the year, the State of the State address. And then the legislature's job is to deliver that. So during the interim, all these decisions are made before you ever get into session. And then the legislators, this is Don, this is our observation we've been going up there since 2006 and realized after a couple of years that the outcome was determined before the session started.
That's right.
And the legislators are just supposed to produce that outcome.
Right.
And so the rest of it's kind of window dressing.
They don't realize, you know, unfortunately the governor doesn't realize that the governor is not the king of the state. Well, the people are the government.
Well,
they sent them up there to do their work.
That's right. We should also mention very quickly that the governor endorsed, I think, all or virtually all of the incumbents in the primary.
Yes.
And that was a thumb in the eye of the grassroots movements around the state, who were often supporting challengers to the incumbents.
Well,
that's true. It's so terrible.
It is terrible. But truth is revealed, and that's always a good thing. Even if it's painful. It is a painful thing. So you want to do some rules changes. Anything else that you're concerned about? Or
One of the things that I mentioned a while ago is at a party level, I'm just one voice, but I want to get transparency. I mean real transparency back into government. The reason people no longer have any faith in their government is because they think they're all a bunch of crooks. They do everything behind closed doors in shrouded, dark back rooms. And so one of the things I want to push for, and again, I know I'm just one person, but I would love to see the Republican Party go back to an open caucus and force that. Another thing that I would like to do is to see some spiritual leadership in the Capitol.
Good.
And there's a number of Christians there, but they don't have any spiritual leadership, and so they just kind of get picked off one by one, and they fold. And so I would like to see this legislative prayer caucus become stronger, and if they will have me, I would love to step up and help lead that thing.
Excellent.
I'm telling you, all of our problems, whether they're economic or social or whatever they are, they are rooted in spiritual issues.
Yep.
And when we turned our back on biblical principles and we became an immoral nation, it's no coincidence that everything else now is coming unraveled.
That's
right. You guys know as well as I do that Adam said that our Constitution was written only for a moral and a religious people.
That's
it
right.
It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other.
Exactly.
That's why we're in trouble.
And even such a... non-Christian as Benjamin Franklin called the entire Congress to a 3-day prayer session when they got stuck on some tough issues about
that's
representation.
Exactly right. And that's kind of strange for a deist who doesn't even believe God would answer prayer to ask them to pray. So yeah. That's proof that Franklin was not a deist.
Well, you can't read his
even pray.
Yeah, you can't read his speech and continue to claim that he was a mere deist.
Oh,
that's for sure.
Grief. No. But see, the problem is Americans are so uninformed. Let me give you a perfect example of how uninformed they are. The eve before the election on Monday night, I was door knocking till 9 o'clock, and I'm visiting a list of voters who historically vote in the primary races, which is a very small number.
Right.
So these are our most informed voters, and I was still encountering people on Monday night before the election that didn't even know that they were in a new district.
Wow. It's sad.
They didn't even know it.
It's sad, isn't it?
It is.
They didn't even know if their precinct was the same. Didn't even know where their polling place was the same as it had been before. And this is the eve of the election. And these are the most informed of the Republican voters in my district.
Wow.
We saw that up here as well.
Did.
I'm a precinct chairman, and the night before at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, somebody is asking me about Bridenstine's voting record, and I'm going, all the stuff that's been going on for all these months, and you're just now, you still haven't made up your mind. So I spent 30 minutes on the phone with the Tulsa County Election Board, got transferred to 3 people, but finally got somebody who could give me the dates and the details of the voting record. And then I called the campaign manager and got back to high school voter registration and gave her that information. And then she was able to make up her mind. But the dependency people have on other people for information, because they don't even know how their own government works, where they would go themselves to go get that information.
That's true.
And so I told her, you go to the Tulsa County Election Board, you go to the Cato County Election Board, the Canadian County Election Board. That information is public record, and you can check up on anybody. You can go to the legislature and lobby. Those people report to you, and then you'll find out the arrogant attitude that the Senate has for the people of Oklahoma and the level of ignorance that is prevalent in the Oklahoma legislature. While they tell you how much they know, and then you start to ask them about specific issues, it's like they don't know.
Hmm.
They know talking points. You mentioned earlier, Dan, the concept of sustainable development, and our state is engaged in a number of different initiatives to implement that. I believe I'm correct in saying that we can count on your no vote for bills that are implementing different provisions. It's not just water and land use; it's all kinds of different aspects that are under the umbrella called sustainable development.
You can count on me standing against that every time I get the opportunity.
Good. Yeah, that Agenda 21, you mentioned the key catchphrase, the Agenda 21 movement or migration or evolution is pervasive. It just shows up in all kinds of aspects of local and state government.
The COGS, the Councils of Government.
That's right.
There are 11 in the state.
Well, and now it's showing up in the way FEMA operates and the state versions of FEMA. There's emergency management administrations in virtually every state as well.
Are you familiar?
Well, you know, guys, the founders warned us that we get the kind of government we deserve.
That's right.
And if you look at the disengagement of people, in my district, we have 35,000 voters and 2,400 voted in the primary.
Wow. Wow.
Out of 35,000 voters.
That's less than 10%.
Yeah, it is.
Yes.
It's really sad, isn't it? It's really sad. And
so what we've got to do is we've got to re-energize the people. We've got to get Christians. You know that half, and I know you guys know this, but half of the 60 million self-professed Protestant or evangelicals in America aren't even registered to vote. They don't even vote. Half of them.
Wow. I didn't know that number. I knew a lot of other numbers, but I didn't know that one.
Now, let's rethink that.
Wow.
If we had people... uninformed people voting, that's just as dangerous as people not voting.
That's exactly right.
Because that's who elected. Senator Crane got reelected by a difference of 412 votes.
Yep.
Wow.
And it was pretty good turnout in that particular district, but 412 people bought the lie that that guy's conservative, and he's not.
He's not. He's one of the most... He's one of the most non-conservative of the Republican senators. In fact, the record I think reflected him at about 55% or some number like that.
He's a rhino and Republican in name only, designated senator based on Oak Pack's
The top rhino. They picked him, right?
Yes, and so he was.
But see, guys, it's hard to prove that someone is a rhino if it's considered negative campaigning to bring their record to light.
Exactly right.
See, they've successfully transferred the argument. Now you have to defend the right to bring up their voting record.
That's true. You're right.
Well, that's okay. We'll bring it up.
It's hard to pinpoint who rhinos are, but you can't. And so when Paul brings up Clark Jolly's record, he's called a negative campaigner.
Right. That's right. Well, it wouldn't be negative if Clark Jolly's voting record wasn't so negative.
Yeah, then it would be positive, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Well, I'm reminded of that phrase, truth hurts, something like that. But
that's exactly right.
Well, that negative campaigning needs to continue. By that, I mean the continued exposure of what the Republican-led Oklahoma legislature is actually doing to the state of Oklahoma, to the citizens of Oklahoma. And it is doing it to us. We passed a huge budget that we really cannot afford.
That's right.
There were multiple bond issues that they tried to get passed that it was only by objection that some of them were shot down.
Right.
We're broke as a state, and yet they continue to grow government. Mike McCutcheon was doing some research into some the history of the power of the parties, and it's regardless of which party is in power, once any party, regardless, achieves that power, the majority, the result is growth of government,
right,
whether it's Republican or Democrat.
Well, OCPA put out a study just this last week that identified the rate of growth of state government in every state in the country, and Oklahoma is the fastest growing state in the entire U.S. We're the reddest state, but we had a 73% growth in local and state government. And so,
guys, in the last 10 years, overall spending in Oklahoma has gone from $9.6 billion to $16.6 billion.
There you go.
The last 10 years.
And that's the fastest rate of growth of any state in the country, including those wild-spending liberal states like California.
Well, and all the talk this year of reducing taxes and reducing the budget, and we still increased the overall spending budget by $331 million.
That's right.
There's something I would like to talk to you. Maybe we can save it for another conversation, is that this move toward the technology, the creation of a new cabinet position in 2010 called the Chief Information Officer position, and this move toward delivery of government services only via technology, IT, information technology. And that coincides with the growth of government. And when you're talking about efficiency or transparency, little alarm bells go off in my mind, is because they generally say that the only solution to that is government 2.0, where everything is online. Well, since states have gone through that process of moving things online, government has grown. And then you are all perpetually tied to the latest version of the software, and then you have computer hardware upgrades across the state. They've also gone through a process of consolidating the power of the Chief Information Officer and the Office of State Finance, which has got a new name,
that's
by
right,
the way.
That's right.
Enterprise management.
So, yeah, I think that's the right term. Yeah, I know they're using the word enterprise a lot.
Yes, in there.
That's
so
straight out of business.
It is. And this efficiency movement is very dangerous. And so I just want to alert you that. Mm. We can have a conversation about it later on.
Sure. Yeah, we need to do that. We need to talk about that.
Efficiency is not...
It sounds like it makes sense because everybody thinks that that's what makes business successful. But the point of the matter is that what is good for business is not necessarily good for government, because business is not in the business of protecting your liberties, and government ought to be.
That's right. That's
when you hear that government needs to be run more like a business, just like you said, you run. You say no, it doesn't. Those are two completely different animals,
that's
and
right.
with two different objectives and,
right.
and goals and structures.
Absolutely.
And we're seeing the redesign of our structure in the state of Oklahoma from government to governance.
That's right.
That's a dangerous government by experts.
Yep.
It's a dangerous trend, but we can get into that at a later day.
There are a few other representatives currently in the House that will be returning that I think you'll find kindred spirits. Have you had any dealings with Mike Ritz in the past, for example?
Oh, sure. I know Dr. Ritz very well. Mike Reynolds, John Bennett.
Good.
There's a number of those guys over there, Sally
right.
Kern.
Right.
You bet.
I'm
looking forward, Paul Wesselhoff, all those guys. I'm looking forward to getting with them,
yep.
and maybe we can form a stronger coalition
exactly.
and have a louder voice.
Exactly. On many occasions, I know Dr. Ritz was the only opposition vote on budget matters, and being a... if it turns out that you also share his perspective on given bills, it would sure be great to have 2 or 3 or 7 or 12 votes than just one. So we may be
You can count it.
We may be headed in that direction. That would be a good thing.
Well, you bet. And I promise you that's where I'll be. And that may make my tenure there very short-lived.
So be it.
The 2 years I have, that's where I'm going to be.
So be it.
Well, maybe in the next 2 years there'll be some more people who can join you.
That'd
be great.
That'd be good. We had an Operation Grassroots, if you want to call it that, where there was a lot of grassroots support for a lot of controversial challenges to incumbents. And I don't think this is over. I think what we just saw in the Supreme Court this week will inspire and motivate and mobilize the grassroots even more to realize that we simply have to take our government back.
Well, we do. And one of the things I wanted to mention to you guys is I'm getting a number of calls. You know, the rally wave of the Tea Party rally kind of subsided, and we went to work at a different